You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast where we talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. It's Friday. Friday, the end of another week, and pretty soon pitchers and catchers will report. It is the 7th day of February, 2020, and I will be responding to some things that are going on and a couple of, at least one tweet that I got, and also addressing something that I can't believe we're in the 5th decade of trying to explain. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available on all the platforms where you get your podcast. You can listen to us directly on the site, Locked On MLB. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. When you get in your car, tell your, what is it called? It's called a smart device. Tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows, including Locked On Red Sox. My friend Gabrielle, I'm appearing on another episode of Locked On Red Sox today. I'm on the Thursday and Friday show, or check out Locked On Mariners. And I was a guest on the Locked On Mariners show this Wednesday, where I was on the Diamond Quiz game show, and I did okay on it. It looks like the big, huge honking trade between the Red Sox and the Dodgers and the Twins that is sending Mookie Betts and David Price is not yet official because of the health of several players that the Minnesota Twins are sending out. It's going to happen because you can't go back and reverse this. This is going to happen. And with that in mind, you look up and you say, okay, it's going to happen. Mookie's still going there. They're just working out the particulars, which players from the Twins organization are going to move. It's still real. And all of my thoughts are still in line on that. Now, I'm being a broken record when I talk about my thoughts and feelings on the whole Mookie Betts trade. I had a nice back and forth with Alex. Alex Corandone. We had a nice back and forth on Instagram where he was basically saying, hey, the Red Sox don't have an unlimited budget, this, that, and the other thing. And I said, that's true, but they do have the budget to sign Mookie Betts. This is not about dropping J.D. Martinez's salary or Jackie Bradley Jr.'s salary. This is an elite player. The Red Sox made this decision. They can afford to do this. They decided not to. And he kept bringing up what they were doing. And then the why is, why did they decide to not do this? And it was because they could save about $7.58 or how much it will cost to save him. And with the mindset of, you can use that money to sign a great player later on. The point that I've made several times, are you going to get a player of Mookie Betts' caliber in his 20s when you have that money to spend? If the answer is no, then you spend it on Mookie Betts now because you have the money to do it. It's a choice that they made. And some other people were throwing stuff at me and saying, like, hey, you know, they can run their business the way they want. Yes, they can. And they will. But I have the right to criticize it. I have the right to say, I'm going to feel less inclined to give you my cash if you are not so inclined to put a winning product on the field. Now, I want to talk about another thing. More than one person has brought up the fact that Pete Rose is in the news again. And even Christopher J. Nessie, my dear online friend who designed the logo that I use for Bull Durham Minute. By the way, subscribe to Bull Durham Minute. New episode is out today with comedian Christian Finnegan. That's another podcast your pal Sully does. Christopher J. Nessie designed the logo for that, did a great job. And he's a super smart guy and a very talented podcaster. And he sent me this Pete Rose thing of like, well, Pete Rose thinks he should get reinstated because the Astros are cheating and that's not as bad as what he did. And I just, I always smack my forehead whenever Pete Rose comes up because the argument is always, hey, someone else did something bad, so that means Pete Rose should be rewarded or something. These arguments never make sense to me. I got arrested for robbing a bank, but this other person committed arson, so therefore I should not be in jail. I don't understand why Pete Rose keeps being dragged up every time there's a new scandal. But man, the Pete Rose people come up every time. And Pete Rose is always there to say, hey, what about me? I should be in. I didn't do as bad as that because he's in the news. Okay, for the fifth straight decade, we have to explain this. We had to explain in the 80s when he suspended, in the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s. Here we are, the 2020s. We still have to explain why it's wrong to bet on games, even if it's to win, if you're the manager of the team. Just this is the easiest way to explain it. If you bet on your team to win on a Saturday, it affects how you manage on the Friday and on the Sunday. If people are knowing you're putting money on a specific game, then they know the money, the games that you don't have the money on don't have the same priority for you. If you have everything, if you push all the chips in the center of the plate in one game, like it's game 7 in the World Series, you manage that differently than you manage a game. Like Bruce Bochy bringing Madison Bumgarner out on short rest to pitch 5 innings out of the bullpen. Or Randy Johnson coming out on no day's rest in 2001. Would that happen in a regular season game? No. But that game has more meaning. It's game 7 of the World Series. There's no tomorrow. If you manage a game where you put more emphasis on one than the other, are you resting certain pitchers? Are you bringing pitchers? Are you arranging your lineup in a certain way that favors one day over another? It puts the games in question. And then when you look at the games and you look at the seasons and you look at how some of the seasons evolved where the Reds had some very talented teams that faded down the stretch, how often were they fading down the stretch? Because Pete was more focused on his betting. And I would argue that betting on baseball is worse than PEDs, is worse than banging on the drums, because at least the PED guys and the Astros banging on the trash cans. Why did I say drums? You know what I meant. At least they were always trying to win. Yeah, they were cheating. But was Pete always trying to win if he was putting more emphasis on the games where he had the money down? Pete Rose deserves to be in the Hall of Fame based on his numbers and everything like that. But he did break the rules of baseball. And just because other people broke the rules of baseball doesn't mean Pete is exonerated. But here's the other point, and this is the more important point about Pete Rose. He would like to be in the Hall of Fame, but he would rather not be in the Hall of Fame. Because the minute he gets into the Hall of Fame, he's no longer a story. Pete Rose has not played a game since 1987. 1987. Or was it 87? No, 86. I'm sorry. Not since 86 has Pete Rose played a Major League Baseball game. He has not been an elite player since the early 1980s. And yet he's still in the news. Every time he has had a chance to rehabilitate himself and show baseball, yeah, I have learned my lesson, put me in the Hall of Fame for reinstatement. Every time he has come to that crossroad, he has always made the choice that makes it impossible for him to do it. He has always alienated the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown by setting up shop outside of the Hall of Fame in the kind of seedier, sleazier part of Cooperstown to set up his autograph session to take the thunder away from the Hall of Fame induction. He does that all the time. When baseball said, Pete, we'll reinstate you, but you got to show us you have moved away from the gambling, he then holds a press conference in a casino. He had decades and decades where he called everybody a liar who said he had been betting on baseball until he got a book advance, and when he said, yeah, I did. Every time he had a chance to get into the Hall of Fame by cooperating with baseball, by cooperating with the Hall of Fame, by cooperating with everyone, he always took the choice that took him out of the Hall of Fame. Because he knows that he makes more money signing autographs and everything like that if he is a martyr. And he knows that he becomes irrelevant once he gets into the Hall of Fame. The minute Pete gets into the Hall of Fame, because he can't manage, you can't reinstate him to be a coach or a manager or anything like that. The only thing you could say is, all right, can you get him into the Hall? Well, he keeps intentionally alienating the Hall, which makes you think, okay, like the Hall of Fame people hate him. You think he'd have his hat in his hand and say, hey, look, what can we do to make this happen? But no, he doesn't want it. And he can keep popping up every time there's a scandal. PEDs and you know, trash cans and Apple Watches and all this other stuff. Oh, no, Pete can do this and say, oh, I'm better than that. Why aren't I in the Hall of Fame? He doesn't want to be. And I can think of no better way to illustrate this than the fact that Pete Rose is in the news right now. Whose birthday was it 2 days ago? Just 2 days ago. Hank Aaron. Henry Louis Aaron, who was a better player than Pete Rose. Pete Rose, great player. Hank Aaron, arguably the greatest offensive player of all time. Certainly top five. Certainly in that conversation. And when was the last time Hank Aaron was in the news? When? When Bonds broke his record in 2007? Is that the last time he was in the news? When was the last time Willie Mays was in the news? When was the last time any great Hall of Famer was in the news? Until, you know, that's the induction of the Hall of Fame. Their record is broken so they can wave to the people who broke the record. And their death. So for Pete Rose, the only time he will be relevant after he gets in the Hall of Fame is if someone passes his hits record and no one is close to that, or when he's dead. He doesn't want to be in the Hall of Fame. It's not good business for him. He remains relevant in the news and would be able to make more money in his autograph shows and everything if he is outside the Hall. If he really wanted to be in the Hall, when he had his chance, he would not have had his press conference and everything sit on a Game of Thrones chair at his casino. He would have come clean in a way other than by his book sales. He would be working with the Hall of Fame committee instead of constantly trying to anger them. Believe someone based on their behavior. If someone is behaving in a way that shows one thing and they constantly behave that way for decades, believe him. He wants to be in the news and relevant. And he cannot do that if he's in the Hall of Fame. I want to address a specific message that I got. And I'm going to open it up, actually, while I'm sitting here talking to you so pleasantly. I got this on Instagram. Follow me on Instagram at Sully Baseball Podcast. This is from Blogi. _ Brian, if I'm mispronouncing how to say your name, I'm sorry, but this is what he wrote to me. He said, Sully, yep, I just listened to the podcast about bets. Thank you. But you talked about buying a player's prime like Votto and Trout, but look how that turned out for the Reds and Angels. Love the podcast. Thanks for listening to the podcast. But I responded, not catching your meaning. And he responded saying, the Reds and Angels bought the primes of Votto and Trout and have nothing to show for it. Maybe the Red Sox thought it wasn't worth it. Okay. Good question. Good point. What he's basically referring to is I was saying that the Red Sox, if they spend the money, eventually spend the money, they won't get player of Mookie Betts' caliber, probably. And why not sign his entire prime? And I pointed out that the Reds did just that. Excuse me. And the Angels did that with Mike Trout. The Reds did that with Joey Votto. And you can point to the fact that the Reds have not won a title with Joey Votto, and neither have the Angels. Now, of course, the Red Sox have won a title with Mookie Betts, so that kind of works against that argument too a little bit. But I do understand what you're saying. Saying they spent all that money, and where's their flag? Where's their parade? Now, what I do want to say about this, and I'm not saying you're wrong, and I'm not saying that there's an invalid point. So I'm not going to say, you're a dummy. No, there's believe me, I interact with plenty of dummies. You're no dummy. You like the podcast. Smart people like this podcast. I don't want to live in a binary world where the only measure of success of a player's involvement with a team is whether or not they delivered a parade. Joey Votto is one of the best offensive players of his generation, certainly the last decade. I think he was actually horribly misused. I think he should be a leadoff hitter. When someone is constantly leading the league of being on base, don't you want that person leading off? But what do I know? I'm here just recording a podcast, but he's had a wonderful career, and he spent it all with the Reds and was part of the Reds who went to the division series in 2010 and 2012 and the wild card game in 2013. Of course, Mike Trout is the best player in baseball and has been an Angel since he first popped up, had his cup of coffee in 2011, burst on the scene in 2012, and has been either the MVP or should have been the MVP almost every year he played. I think the one time he didn't face didn't get the top five in the MVP was a couple of years ago when he was injured for a giant chunk of the season, and he was actually having his best season. But I think anyone who follows baseball knows that Trout is not only putting up the best numbers, but is really one of the most dynamic players to watch. And I happen to love Joey Votto, not just because I think he's talented, he gets on base and everything, but I just think he's fun. He seems like at least the way he presents himself, seems like a fun guy, very easy to root for. Now, my point I'm going to make is this. There is something to be said about having a player like that for their entire prime for a fan base, even if they don't deliver a championship. And I'm thinking about some people like, for example, Dale Murphy was a guest on this podcast. Wonderfully generous man who had a wonderful career with the Atlanta Braves. Borderline Hall of Famer. Won two MVPs. And was on the team when the pickings were slim. And of course, the great sort of cruel irony about Dale Murphy is the minute they traded him away, the Braves went on one of the great runs of the history of divisional play. But even though Dale Murphy didn't deliver a championship to Atlanta, certainly was no fault of his own as he put up wonderful season after wonderful season. But he was also a player that the fan base could point to and say, hey, I grew up rooting for that guy. That was my guy. I cheered for that guy. He was my guy. There were plenty of people who played on teams when I was growing up who spent a long, long time on the team, and they wound up winning a title. Cal Ripken won a title. Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker, Lance Parrish, Jack Morris, all of them, they won a title. You know, and Fernando Valenzuela and people like that won titles with their team. Mike Schmidt, George Brett. But then there were people like, I grew up rooting for Jim Rice. I grew up a Red Sox fan, and there were players who played their prime, or some of them played their whole career, like Yaz and Rice, but also Fisk and Louis Tiant, all these people who played with Rice for giant chunks of their career. They never delivered a title. There was no championship for those players. Dwight Evans, Jerry Remy. But you could point to that. That was my guy. I rooted for that person. And I root for them year in and year out. Yankee fans my age had that with Don Mattingly. That was their person that they rooted for. And you can take a look at some recent examples. Edgar Martinez spent his entire career with the Seattle Mariners. Are you going to look me in the eye and say, well, what was the use of that? What was the use of that? If you grew up in Seattle, you rooted for him. He was somebody you could invest emotion in. You know, we saw just this last year the retirement of Ichiro, but also the end of Felix Hernandez's tenure in Seattle. Yeah, he signed on with the Braves. He's trying to extend his career a little bit there. But all those years, he didn't pitch in one postseason game for the Seattle Mariners. And yet, if you're a Mariner fan, you had someone to cheer for year in and year out. Tony Gwynn never won a title in San Diego, neither did Trevor Hoffman. One of the reasons why Trevor Hoffman didn't win titles is because Trevor Hoffman lost a bunch of big games, but that's a different story. Gwynn's a better example. You know, when you look at some of these players, and we all saw people who rooted for teams who didn't win, but they had someone who they could cling to. Ryan Sandberg with the Chicago Cubs. You know, players who you just were, that was our guy. And it was worthwhile. I'm not going to live in a binary world where it's title or nothing. Only one fan base is happy. You could have a player play their prime in a city and say, hey, I grew up rooting for that person. That's worth something. That isn't nothing. How did that work out? If Joey Votto plays his whole career in Cincinnati and doesn't win a title, or Mike Trout, yeah, it'd be super frustrating for Trout and for Votto to not get a ring. But you can't say it was worth nothing. You can't say that it isn't something worthwhile. I know a bunch of people who are Milwaukee Brewer fans. A bunch. You say the name Robin Yount to them, they'll get a huge grin on their face. But why? What did he ever win? There's more than one way a career could be worthwhile. I think it would be good for baseball if Votto wins a World Series, if Trout wins a World Series. Hell, if Kershaw wins a World Series. I'm dying to see Kershaw get that monkey off of his shoulder because he's a wonderful generation pitcher. Did that make grammatical sense? I actually don't think it did. But if we're just going to judge on whether or not a title was won, then my goodness, what a joyless existence that is. I don't want to look at Edgar and Robin Yount and Tony Gwynn and look at, say, or Jim Rice for that matter, and say, ugh, what a waste that was. They didn't even win a title. There's more to it than that. Yes, that is the great thing. And it's wonderful when you see a player finally win a ring. And there are weird ways it could happen sometimes. The best is Zimmerman, just this last year with the Washington Nationals. He's been there forever. He was part of the original Nationals team. And that to have him, who have stuck with the team all those years, win, yeah, that's the best case scenario when something like that. That's when you have tears flowing down your eyes. Sometimes it's a situation where a player goes to another team and wins a ring relatively late with a new team. We saw that, you know, oddly with Wade Boggs and Tim Raines with the Yankees. We saw that with Dave Winfield and Paul Molitor with the Toronto Blue Jays. That can sometimes happen. Sometimes you have it where the player has been with them forever and they finally win the World Series, but they're injured. They can't actually play. They get a World Series ring for their troubles, but they can't actually participate in the game. Frank Thomas is an example of that. He was on all those White Sox teams, and he was on the 2005 White Sox, but he was injured and couldn't play in the postseason. Got a ring for his troubles. And sometimes it's perfect when you win a World Series title in your prime for the team that you're with and remembered forever. Cal Ripken was that way with the Orioles. Obviously, Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera are examples of that. Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner are examples of that with the San Francisco Giants. Albert Pujols, even though he's going to spend a tremendous amount of time with the Angels, his prime was spent with the St. Louis Cardinals. You understand what I'm saying. Jimmy Rollins, Ryan Howard with the Phillies are examples of that. Whether or not they're Hall of Famers, that's a different conversation. But you understand what I'm meaning here. You understand what I'm saying. So, longevity with a team can be a reward in itself. Because let's remember, this is about fans going to the ballpark, cheering their team, and attaching their emotion to a player. And if you can do that for all the players' best years, that's something. That is something. So while I respect and enjoyed getting your Instagram direct message, I got to say, Brian, I don't agree with you. I don't. So something to think about as we enter the weekend. And the Oscars are this weekend, so your pal Sully is going to be into that. Some really good movies came out this year. I really dug Parasite. I liked Little Women was a really good movie. I thought 1917 was a really good movie. I thought Marriage Story was a good movie. Or there was another really good movie that came out. I got to see my buddy Patrick Gallo was in The Irishman. There were some good films. There was one other film I'm forgetting here. I feel like there's some other film I'm forgetting here. I'll remember it some other time. It doesn't matter. Jojo Rabbit. That's what I was thinking. Jojo Rabbit. Fantastic movie. Absolutely fantastic movie. So I'm going to be into the Oscars this weekend. Maybe some of you are as well. For the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and check us out on all the platforms we go on. And have a great weekend. This has been the Locked On MLB show for the 7th day of February 2020. Check out Locked On Red Sox as I'm on that today too. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.